give me back tomorrow. I've taken all that I can stand. Throw the weight of the world from the palm of your hand.
Good morning and welcome to Lift Your Spirits Radio on 1150 AM KKNW in Seattle. I'm Bernadette Pager of Informed Choice Washington, which is a nonprofit organization advocating for scientific integrity in public health policies, healthy immunity, and fully informed consent. Like all of our shows, what we're presenting today is for educational purposes only, but we hope what you hear is going to spur you on to action, to learn more, to tell others, and really kind of feel empowered to be healthy and happy in your own life. Today we have an amazing guest with us, a woman I like to call friend, Jennifer Margulis. Jennifer Margulis, PhD, is an award-winning science journalist and author of several books, including an amazing one that is still a bestseller today, Your Baby, Your Way, Taking Charge of Your Pregnancy, Childbirth, and Parenting Decisions for a Happier, Healthier Family. She's a Fulbright grantee and a much sought-after speaker. She's also co-author of a book called The Vaccine Friendly Plan and The Addiction Spectrum with Dr. Paul Thomas. Some of our listeners might know Dr. Thomas. I want to get him on the show one of these days. Right now, Jennifer is writing a biography about her mother, somebody you might not have heard of, and yet her work has impacted the world. She was an evolutionary biologist whose theory of symbiosis revolutionized the concept of how life on Earth began and changed. Jennifer is a meticulous researcher who is one of a rare but luckily growing breed of journalists who not only have journalistic integrity, but the nerve to write the facts as she finds them. And she's not afraid to be controversial. She's nationally known as a science journalist who opens people's eyes to the realities behind accepted practices in healthcare and medicine. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks so much for having me, Bernadette. It's nice to be here.
Oh, wonderful. And you're joining us from Oregon. How are things down in Oregon?
Very, very hot. It was 92 degrees yesterday, and it's going to be in the 90s today. But I live in the southern part of the state where we do not get a lot of rain. So people think of Oregon and they think of rainy days. We have brilliant, bright sunshine. And I'm also blessed to be in a community that's tremendously healthy. We've had exactly zero deaths from COVID-19.
That is fantastic. You know, health and disease resistance go hand in hand. One of the things that really has annoyed me is watching for the past few months our public health leaders stand at podiums and say, there's no cure, there's no prevention, there's nothing we can do, wash your hands, hide. And you're just shouting. Wait a minute, you tell us that stress impairs your health, that having underlying health conditions and being overweight and smoking, all of these things increase our susceptibility to infection and disease. So why don't you admit the opposite is true, right? The opposite is true. Tell people, don't smoke, take vitamin D, see, you know, a naturopath or somebody knows how to build real health in you. They don't say that. It's like if they say vitamin C, I feel like they're going to be penalized or something. They're afraid to go there. They can talk pharma, but they won't talk nature. And I find that. What do you think?
Yeah, no, you're not. Well, no, it's not that they're actually, it's a genuine fear, because I think many of the doctors, if not all of the doctors in our state, were sent letters from the federal government by the FTC and other entities telling them that if they gave natural remedies for COVID-19, including mention of vitamin C and vitamin D, they were under some kind of federal violation and they were being investigated. So it's not that people are afraid of getting in trouble for giving alternative health advice, it's that they are actually getting in trouble for giving alternative health advice, which is very surprising in a way, because don't we all have the same goal? I always say this about any issue that we're talking about, no matter how controversial, that our goal is to have healthy, happy people. I loved the introduction to your show, because I think that's what we want. We all want our kids to be healthy and happy. And if we can find ways to promote health and happiness, why would we stop that conversation?
It does show the corporate capture of our public health agencies by the drug industry, that they're not allowed to go there. On the way, I know that because there's been naturopaths and other alternative caregivers in Washington State and across the United States who have received such letters of cease and desist publishing your information. They use the same language they may potentially use for people touting drugs or actual things that are harmful, in that they say, you cannot say that cures or treats specifically COVID, because there's been no study saying that. And I don't know if they're coming down hard, because I haven't really looked on, no, I don't think they are, on doctors using drugs to treat. So what the doctors really have to do is be very careful with the language and how they put it out there. They have to say, this study shows that vitamin C reduces inflammation and increases glutathione levels and that sort of thing. And this may help with the symptoms of COVID. So you have to be so careful in the language in order to not be knocked down. It's so much needs to change. And I always say that there's that silver lining in this COVID chaos, is that all of these key issues we've been talking about for years, the general public is being able to see why they are so important. So in our conversation today, we're going to be leading to a very important question. Does symbiosis hold the key to health and happiness in COVID-19? Before we get to that specific question, I want listeners to learn about you, who you are, Jennifer, and how did you become a bold and daring science writer?
Okay, so I've been researching and writing about issues related to children's health for almost 20 years now. That kind of dates me. And what happened with me is I actually have an academic background. I have a PhD. My PhD is in the humanities, and I've always wanted to teach people who wanted to learn. And then I had a baby, and I had sort of the super model in my mind that you could just do everything all at once and have an incredibly successful career and raise a really happy, healthy family, and women could do it all, right? Because women can do it all. Well, it's not true when women can't do it all. And I found that I was so drawn to being at home, and not at home, but to taking care of my daughter. And I was so keenly interested in everything that had to do with her health and well-being and happiness, as every new mom is. And I had to go back to work when she was 6 weeks old. I was teaching full-time at Emory University. I was a visiting assistant professor there. And as wonderful as that was, I felt like I had cut my arm off and left it at home. Mm-hmm. And I got the first speeding ticket of my adult life, speeding home between my classes to nurse her. And, you know, I had always wanted to have children. And I thought that you just kind of have your kids. And I didn't realize how much we're up against when we become parents, and how many things are thrown at us that are not science or evidence-based. And what happened, Bernadette, was that there was like this friction between what I thought was right and how I was being treated. And so I basically did a really deep dive. And you've heard this story before, but you know, right when my daughter was born, it was a very difficult labor. It was in the hospital. 22 hours of labor. And for the first 15 hours, the nurses were like, nothing, not even a dimple, meaning that my cervix hadn't dilated to let the baby out. I was very discouraged physically and mentally. I would say that I had a very abusive hospital birth, and this was in Atlanta, Georgia. And so then when the baby was born, you know, you hold this unbelievably precious creature in your arms, someone you've never met before, but has been part of you for not only your whole life, but for all of the women who came before you. And all you want to do is protect her. And meanwhile, they're trying to rip her out of my arms, and they're telling me, you know, they're scrubbing her with this you know, perfumed soap, and then the nurse comes in with a tray and says, okay, it's time for her hepatitis B vaccine. And my face just went completely flat. I felt that sort of terror that you feel when you're getting into a fight or flight. And I was a very educated person. My husband and I were both graduate students at Emory University in Atlanta. And I knew, because we had gotten a marriage license and because I had had excellent prenatal care, that I did not have hepatitis B, that it was a sexually transmitted disease. I knew that my husband did not have hepatitis B. We had been in a monogamous relationship. And I knew that there was absolutely no chance that my daughter could get hepatitis B. And they wanted to stick a needle in her thigh within an hour of her being born. And all I said, I didn't say no, Bernadette. I just said, I need some time to research this. I want to talk to her doctor. And the nurse got furious at me. And, you know, very angry, narrowing her eyes, changing her entire demeanor as if I had somehow just become a bad mother. And the last thing you want when you've just had a baby is to be a bad mother, Bernadette, right? I really wanted to do exactly what was right. So I walked around for 2 weeks, absolutely terrified. I mean, one of the things I did was I actually called the CDC and they never called me back. This was the age before the internet was really getting off the ground. You couldn't just, you know, go to DuckDuckGo and look something up, right? So when we went in for the 2 week checkup, I brought her to the pediatrician, and my husband and I were both like kind of confessing, like we had done this bad thing because we'd been so shamed in the hospital for so many reasons. And the doctor was completely cavalier. And she said, oh, that vaccine's been counterindicated in newborns. And that's not exactly accurate, but what was so interesting to me is that that was the moment, I'm so grateful for her, that was the moment where I realized I had to take all of my health, my child's health and my own health into my own hands. I couldn't just do what the doctor told me because a nurse was shaming me into getting something that a doctor 2 weeks later was telling me I absolutely should not have gotten. So mm-hmm. It was an incredible moment of awakening. I had never had the idea that I would question anything to do with vaccines, but it sent me on a journey to question everything.
To question everything. That is so important. And you remind me that right now in many hospitals, women are having babies, people are very ill, and they are not allowed to have with them a family member who can be that advocate, who can listen and look up and be strong with them, for them, at these times. And, you know, to prevent medical mistakes, which do happen, and doctors and nurses are wonderful people, but they do make mistakes. They're only human. And then there is sort of the bullying of the medical industry toward their products. I won't go into the story now, but my pop was once kicked out of the hospital because we did our research and the drug they wanted to give him was extremely dangerous. And the drug we offered, which was very old and very safe and very inexpensive, was not what they considered standard of care. Even though the doctor agreed it was the preferred medicine, but they couldn't give it to him. Anyway, I'm squirreling.
I'd like to speak to that because, you know, it's incredible what helps women when they're having a baby. And, you know, we've looked at this extensively. And the most important thing to know, which is the title of an article from The Atlantic, is that the most scientific birth is the least technological. And so what do women need when they're having a baby? They need to feel safe. They need to feel comfortable. They need to feel held. And how does that happen? That happens with having constant support. So we know if you have a constant support during labor, and I say we know because there was an excellent study that was done on this. So this is the peer-reviewed science, that you will not only have a shorter labor, but you'll have a better memory of the experience if you have constant labor support. And what are we doing? We're taking away the support from women. Mm-hmm. So a woman who's, you know, almost 4 million, our population is going down, but approximately 4 million babies are born in the United States each year, and only about 2% are out of hospital birth. So the vast majority of women, as we speak, are giving birth or planning to give birth in the hospital. During this COVID-19 crisis, that is a huge, I don't want to say mistake, but that is a huge problem. Because if you go into a hospital and you're by yourself and you're being attended by strangers who may or may not be, I mean, they're, you know, overworked or exhausted or afraid, you are going to have a much harder time having a baby because you're not feeling safe and you're not feeling comfortable and you can't get out of the amygdala, the part of your brain that is, you know, causing anxiety and fight or flight. So I just, I would encourage all of your listeners to research freestanding birth centers and to talk to a midwife, a home birth midwife. Most people have never had an experience or an interaction with one, and to realize that with a low risk pregnancy, you're most likely safer if you have your baby outside the hospital, especially right now.
That's amazing. Do you have information about that on your website at jennifermargolis.net about birthing?
I do. I mean, I have, so there's an article section and I've written dozens of articles about home birth and about hospital birth. And yes, you can find all of them are referenced. You can click on the links and read the science for yourself. What's really interesting, Bernadette, is that we have over half a dozen very large scale studies sort of looking at birth, right? And it's, these are difficult. You can, as with any scientific study, you can find the flaws in them. But what you see consistently over and over again is that home birth is as safe or safer than hospital birth. A planned home birth in a low risk mom is safe at home. With experienced midwives. I forgot that part.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. We're going to move to a break, but I love that. We're going to move from birth to motherhood and your mother in particular. When we come back, you're listening to KKNW 1150 AM in Seattle. I'm Bernadette, your host, and we're with Jennifer Margolis, and we'll be back in a bit. On the prize. Oh.
Train's coming down the track. Whoever you are, whatever it takes. Need information about your child's vaccinations? Informed Choice Washington is a nonprofit organization of parents, family members, medical professionals, educators, and Washingtonians from all walks of life. They believe in personal freedoms and individual choices, including healthcare choices. Their mission is to advocate for vaccine policy reform based on scientific integrity and individual health needs, to promote education about healthy immunity, and to protect informed consent and medical freedom in Washington State. To stay informed, visit informedchoicewa.org. Informed Choice Washington envisions the future where every doctor is fully trained in identifying vaccine risk factors and recognizing vaccine injury. Every child is afforded a personalized approach to disease prevention, and every parent has the freedom to make the best healthcare decisions for themselves and their families. They know every child matters. Go to informedchoicewa.org today.
Did you know that 70 to 80% of your immune system resides in your gut lining? ION Gut Health goes beyond probiotics to strengthen this barrier and balance your microbiome the natural way. This soil-derived supplement is scientifically proven to reinforce your first line of defense, keeping harmful foreign particles out of your bloodstream. Maintain a healthy immune system so that it can protect you when you need it most. Support your immune system with ION Gut Health. Learn more at ionbiome.com.
We all know that vitamin C is an essential nutrient our immune system needs. But did you know there's scientific evidence that vitamin C can be used safely and effectively to boost your body's immune system to fight infections? To learn how you can live life to the fullest, find the vitamin C expert, Dr. Paul Anderson, on Instagram and Facebook by searching DRA online or visit at consultdranderson.com today.
Get your daily dose of variety. Alternative Talk, 1150.
A promise to keep. Don't go back to sleep. The door is round and open, and the river's so deep.
All right, Kelly.
Oh. Welcome back to Lift Your Spirits Radio on 1150 AM KKNW. I'm Bernadette Pager of Informed Choice Washington, your host today. And with me is Jennifer Margulis, science writer extraordinaire, a woman who's bold and brave and writes the facts as she sees it. And before the break, we were talking about the process of giving birth and the empowerment that is so important, and the support that's so important. We're going to flip things around now and move to Jennifer talking about her mother. In fact, one thing that you said earlier on, I want to back up for a minute, because you said that when you're holding your brand new baby, you're holding somebody who's been a part of you your whole life and a part of your mother and your grandmother, something like that. There's science in what that said. That's not just being woo-woo, right? That's you know, you're born with all the eggs that are going to be your children. And tell us the science of that. And then we'll go to your mother.
Well, it's a perfect segue, because, you know, of course we are all of our genetic material, everything that we have comes from our ancestors, and it has generation after generation after generation. So yes, a little girl, because I have three daughters, Bernadette, and a son, a little girl is born with all of the eggs that she's going to have in her, you know, in her ovaries for her entire life. And so there is a real way where you've always carried your children with you. And I don't know if you had that experience when you had a baby, but it's like, I know you, but mm-hmm. I have to learn who you are. And, you know, and you see that as your child grows up too, because, you know, you see so many things that remind you maybe of your mom or your grandma or your, you know, somebody, your uncle, and you think, where did that come from? Where did that child get that? And, you know, that kind of brings you to the whole nature nurture thing. But one thing that's very interesting is that I have my mother's mitochondria. So my mother was Lynn Margulis. She was an evolutionary biologist who had ideas about evolution that originally were considered completely heterodox. And in fact, she was always getting into sort of scientific debates. She challenged a very male, very, you know, conventional establishment in biology and microbiology. And she has a theory about evolution that completely changes what we understand to be the mechanism. And what's interesting is that the mitochondria, the sort of powerhouses of the cell, are passed down from mother to daughter. You know, they're matrilineal. So I wasn't just making it up when I was talking about having my, you know, my mom and my grandma and all the other generations standing behind us, as you do as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That is fantastic. And so the term symbiosis, which we mentioned earlier, tell us about that and how it relates to your mom.
Okay. So we have to get a little bit technical. Stop me if I'm getting too technical. And I should say, I'm not a biologist. And so I'm, you know, it's very easy to get things a little bit wrong, and I will try not to do that. But the idea of symbiosis is that, you know, that we in recent years, we've been learning about how important it is, the microbiome, and how we have this microbial world that lives in us and on us, as do every other creature. There are bacteria everywhere. There's bacteria in the soil. There is bacteria that can live within grains of sand. There's bacteria in the ocean. And the idea of symbiosis is that the primitive bacteria, so these are called prokaryotic cells, primitive is the wrong word. See, right now, my mom would be like, they are not primitive. They are more sophisticated than we are. They are smarter. They are survivors. But anyway, early, let me say it that way. The early bacteria actually were once free living organisms that then became integrated into more complicated cells. So eukaryotic cells are the more complicated cells. They're cells that have a nucleus. Some of those cells have chloroplasts. If they're in plants, they have mitochondria. And the idea that my mother proposed was that chloroplasts in plant cells and were once free living organisms. So mitochondria and chloroplasts, mitochondria, which are in all cells, were once free living bacterial cells. Let me say it like this: ingestion without digestion. Two cells get together, and one of them might try to eat the other, and instead of eating each other, they end up folding together. That's the idea of symbiosis, and you see it on the micro level. And in fact, that theory has been quote unquote proven as much as you can sort of prove science. So people thought that she was absolutely nuts. This is not important. What are you talking about? No. And then it turns out with electron microscopy, we could actually see that indeed it is true that our organelles and our cell and our complicated animal cells were once free living organisms, the chloroplast and the mitochondria. But it also happens at the macro level. So that's the micro level. You know, we have species all who are living symbiotically. And in fact, we can't really survive without, I mean, I think that they've done experiments about this with sterile mice where you try to kind of wipe out their entire microbiome. And what you see is because, you know, mice have it, bees have it, Bernadette. Mm-hmm. Bees live in symbiosis with all sorts of bacteria. Isn't that kind of fascinating?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just also in any case, what it means is that this is a model of cooperation because it's a model of symbiosis. It's that species from different, you know, absolutely different species come together to help each other, and that you see that as a mechanism of evolution. And there's something else to that, which is that we think of evolution as something that happened in the past. It sort of happened and it's done. And now we're at the pinnacle, humans, right? My mother didn't think that at all. She didn't like humans. She said that, I mean, she, liked them. She loved individuals, but she said that our species just smacked of arrogance. And
oh, that's so true.
Self-appointed sapiens, meaning that we were self-appointed to be wise, but that actually we were not that smart. She was an environmentalist before it ever became popular. She was somebody who rode her bicycle everywhere. She was talking about the primacy and the importance of the microbial world. And she said, oh, my daughter says I'm a feminist because I'm a woman in science. I couldn't care less. I'm not a feminist. But if she wants to say so, fine. I am a spokesperson for the Protoctista. You know, she, her whole thing was that we have to pay more attention to the small things, to the microscopic world, because it is a like we are, and we think of ourselves as these incredible humans, so intelligent, changing the world, trying to get us into Mars, you know, like Elon Musk is doing. But my mother thought of us as walking skyscrapers of bacteria.
I love that. I love that. And yet in the infinite wisdom of these people who named themselves, you know, sapien and king of wisdom, are at war with microbes right now, a major war all over the planet, which is so infuriating, right? It's like we talked about earlier that people who are healthy and eating well and exercising, they're becoming skyscrapers that are very much beautiful, healthy hosts, so that you don't have, I guess you don't have microbes living where they don't belong, right? Kind of thing. I've heard that you could swab anybody at any time in any orifice. You know, you probably got some COVID in your nose, you know, and flu or whatever. But unless, as long as you're healthy and your mucosal lining is healthy and everything there is healthy, you don't get invasion. You don't get any troublemaking happening with that. And Western medicine, allopathic medicine, as I said earlier, sort of acknowledges the opposite. They acknowledge that times of stress and when your body is in this weakened condition, pathogens can invade. But they do not empower individuals to say, okay, here are the tools, the building blocks of what you need to do to live symbiotically, you know, in the world. No, we're at war with this invisible enemy. And, you know, this COVID chaos has led us to the point where we can no longer tolerate public health agencies doing this. Waging, because when you wage war on microbes, you're waging war on yourself. It's self-defeating, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That was so well put. And we should, you know, it's what I like to tell people is that I believe that this represents a fundamental misunderstanding about our relationship with microbes, including with viruses, right? So with viruses and bacteria. So we finally were in, I think, phase three here in Southern Oregon. We have about 225,000 people in Jackson County. And as I said before, we've had zero deaths. And, you know, in the newspapers today, you're seeing some headlines that say cases in the United States are rising. Well, the number of cases, as you just so eloquently explained, is actually irrelevant because people are living, are cohabitating like you said, with many different viruses and bacteria. The question is, if the cases become severe, if people get very sick, and I don't want to downplay that because it's absolutely devastating. And we have had many, many devastating deaths. And, you know, the issue is not getting the virus. The issue is succumbing to the virus or getting incredibly sick from it. But what's so important to remember is that we are our viruses. I mean, that's something that my mother said. You know, we actually have pieces of genetic pieces of viruses in our own human genome that we have always been co-evolving to live with these viruses. And that a virus, I mean, I don't mean to give the virus agency, but I'll just say it this way anyway, and your biologists who are listening might roll their eyes at me. But, you know, a virus does not want to kill its host. The virus does not want you to die. It doesn't want to get out of balance. It wants to find a way to live in balance with you. And that's what symbiosis is all about, is that we have all sorts of microbes in us and on us. And when they get out of balance, and also fungi, of course, we have yeast. Everybody who's listening has had a yeast infection or a child with a yeast infection at some point, probably. What's happening there is not, you can't scrub out all the yeast that live on your body, the fungi, right? You don't want to, but you want them to be in balance. So the question that everyone should be asking is, how do we get into balance? How do we stay in balance? How do we keep ourselves healthy? Not how do we avoid every human on the planet, because we are humans and we thrive. All mammals thrive from active touching. If you take rats, rat pups, and you know what a mother rat does with her pups is she licks them. You've seen a cat do that with its scratchy tongue. And that's actually stimulating growth hormone. It's the same with humans. It's why we have to make an effort to touch our teens, even though it's so hard. But teenagers, like every other human, they need active touching, and that's how we grow. And so then adults need growth hormone too. We're not growing up anymore, but it keeps our bones strong. So if you take humans and you tell them never to talk to other humans, if you're spraying down every surface with antibiotic spray and bleach, you are actually disrupting the microbiome and you're disrupting a human immune system to be able to strongly fight an infection. Add that all of the other environmental toxins that we're being exposed to, and you have a perfect storm of unhealth or dis-ease. And that's exactly what we don't want. We want our humans and our Americans to be healthy.
Exactly. Just beautifully said. That's the world I envision moving forward. And that all of us who begin to understand this need to actively work toward that world. We can't sit back and just, you know, and hope for it. As individuals, take charge in our own lives to do it, and then take action to ensure our public health agencies begin to switch from war to peace and to build true health. This is what needs to happen. We need to rebuild all of our public health agencies to know this. So I'm very excited about your new project that you're working on, because you're writing about your mother and all these wonderful ideas. So is it a biography of her life?
Yeah, so the book right now, the title might change, but it's called A Brief History of Life. And the book is actually about, so my mother grew up on the south side of Chicago. She got into college when she was 14 years old. She went to the University of Chicago. When she was 16 years old, she met this tall, handsome stranger on the steps. And that person ended up being the astronomer Carl Sagan, who's probably familiar to you. So my mother, Lynn Margulis, and Carl Sagan got married when she was 19. They met when she was 16, and they had their first child, who's my oldest brother, Dorian, when she was 21. So my book is actually about three things. It's about the history of life on Earth as she understood it, which is different from the history of life on Earth as we learn in the textbooks. And so it's about the history of life on Earth and her science. It's about her life growing up on the south side of Chicago and her experience, you know, being married to Carl Sagan and also later in life. And then it's about my relationship with her. And, you know, full disclosure, my relationship with her was not easy. I have three brothers, and she was delighted to finally hold a little girl in her hand. She didn't think it was possible for a girl baby to come out of her body. And she used to say she had three sons and a daughter and a half. But as you might imagine, my mother and I both have really strong personalities, and it's not an easy story to write. So it's actually more of a memoir interwoven with science and biography than a straight biography. Someone is writing a biography of my mom that's going to come out from Random House, but my book is being published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and it's going to be, I hope, very compelling and readable and eye-opening.
I'm so looking forward to reading it. And one of the things I adore about your writing is you can take very complicated subjects and make them very human and accessible. All of your writing is like that. And so you help lead people on these amazing journeys. I mean, everybody is capable of understanding science. It's just, you just need the right person who can frame it for you in a way that makes it accessible. So I so appreciate you as a writer for that, among many other things. So did you have access to her, to diaries or something to...
Yes, my mother was a tremendously prolific writer her entire life. She started a journal, her first journal, when she was 11 years old, and I've read that journal twice now. It's just, it's an astounding document, to be honest. She also, and so she kept journals her entire life, and then she also had major correspondences with basically every Nobel Prize winning scientist. And what's really interesting is, so my mom was born in 1938, right? And her name was Lynn, L-Y-N, and that could be a man's name or a woman's name. And that actually, I think, served her quite well, because people she wrote to, every scientist she wrote to was a man. And they all assumed, they would write back to her and say, "Dear Mr. Sagan," or "Dear Mr. Alexander." So she kind of got, you know, she wasn't treated like an anomaly, which she really was. I mean, there were so few women in science back then. She was just treated as an eager younger colleague. So I have all of her papers as well, and, you know, her letters and everything that's informing the book.
Oh, that is going to be so interesting to read. I want to talk more about that when we come back, but I also want to give an opportunity for anybody out there who is listening to give a call. If you've got a question for Jennifer, we've got an 888 number. It's 888-298-5569, or there's a local number you can call, 425-373-5527. So if you want to call in, Jennifer, you can put that on your Facebook page maybe. So you're listening to Lift Your Spirits Radio, 1150 AM KKNW, out of Seattle with Jennifer Margulis in Portland. We'll be back in a bit.
Did you know how your immune system protects you from illness? Wish you knew more about what lifestyle choices you could make to keep your immune system strong? What healing approaches might work best for you? Well, tune in on the first Friday of each month when the host of Lift Your Spirits Radio will be Bernadette Pager of Informed Choice Washington. Bernadette will be joined by medical and science experts to discuss healthy immunity and how you and your family can achieve it. You can reach Bernadette Pager at informedchoicewa.org.
Lift Your Spirits with us every Friday at 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. on 1150 a.m. KKNW Seattle. We will be introducing you to fascinating people, fun places to visit, and activities that are guaranteed to lift your spirits. Miss a show? No worries, you can visit 1150kknw.com and click on our archive page, or like Lift Your Spirits with Dina Marie on Facebook for upcoming guests and events. Contact me, Dina Marie, visit dina-marie.com. Thank you so much for listening.
So, you know, all healing begins in the cells. And for the cells to do their job, well, they need the right nutrients, like vitamin C and D, and gases, like oxygen. Did you know that there is a treatment that infuses every cell of your body with oxygen? Hyperbaric oxygen therapy, HBOT for short, is a safe and effective medical treatment that can be used in therapies for many injuries and diseases. HBOT was actually used successfully during the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic to treat hypoxia and respiratory failure, and it's now being used to successfully treat COVID-19, as several clinical trials are underway. HBOT increases your production of glutathione, which is critical to immune function, and increases stem cell proliferation. To learn more about this century-old technology that is the future of medicine, visit hbotnews.org today. That's hbotnews.org.
Ready to shake things up? Try Alternative Talk 1150.
Don't go back to sleep. The door's round and open, and the river's so deep.
All right, Kelly.
Welcome back to Lift Your Spirits Radio on 1150 AM KKNW. I'm Bernadette Pager of Informed Choice Washington, your host today. And with me is Jennifer Margulis, the amazing science writer. You know, before I forget, Jennifer, actually, let me throw that number out there again. If anybody wants to ask Jennifer a question, we've got a call-in number, 888-298-5569. Or locally, 425-373-5527. But you had mentioned to me on the break, a museum in Germany is doing a tribute to your mom. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it's the ZKM Museum, and they are actually doing a huge display that's going to be open to the public, I think, in a week or two now. It was closed because of coronavirus, but it's called Critical Zones at the ZKM Museum. And my mother did a lot with geology as well as with biology, and she is one of the people who is credited with helping spread the Gaia hypothesis. That was a hypothesis that was first written and thought through by an independent scientist named Jim Lovelock, who just celebrated his 100th birthday and is still alive. And so the museum is curating an exhibit by Bruno Latour, who's a very famous French philosopher, and it's looking at critical zones, the importance basically of the Earth's crust. So some of my mother's original field microscope will be in that exhibit, as well as some incredible electron microscopy photographs and letters.
I wonder if they're going to allow virtual tours or have something online for people to visit.
You can visit it online already. There is a virtual portal. So they did do the opening. The grand opening started virtually, and now people can actually go. Also, her original editions of her books. My mother was tremendously prolific. She wrote so many science books in her life. So you can see those all on display there, too.
Will you be putting on your website, which is jennifermargulis.net, will you be putting a link to that and to information about your mom that listeners can?
Yes, I should do that post-haste.
Okay.
What a good idea.
Yeah. So listeners, give her a bit of time since it's not up there now, but there's plenty to explore even before that. So I'm going to move on a little bit in this last bit as we wait to see if anybody has any questions for you, because, you know, we want to talk about, you know, our theme is symbiosis, and does it hold the key to health and happiness in COVID-19? So today in Washington State, there is a statewide requirement, order, mandate. Nobody's quite sure the legal status of this that came from Governor Inslee and Secretary of Health Wiesmann, that, you know, if you're out in public or outdoors or indoors, you always have to wear a mask, and outdoors, if you can't space 6 feet, to wear a mask. And there's a lot of controversy over this, and especially, you know, if you go to Informed Choice Washington website, there's an article up that said the capabilities of cloth masks didn't change, so why did the messaging? So why are we being asked to wear things that cannot ever block a virus? I've heard it described as putting up a chain link fence to stop a mosquito. And then, you know, people wear these basic germ catchers on their face, which they touch all the time, and then they become sources of transmission. And all the science says that. And really, by blocking your face and doing all this, it's sort of the opposite. It's not that we want to give people COVID by not wearing a mask, but we understand that the mask doesn't help and it potentially harms, right? And there are safe things that you can do to live in harmony and be respectful. So talk about, what do you do to be respectful of everybody around you and yet live in harmony and not fear?
Sure. I mean, it's it's interesting because we're having the same ordinance here in Oregon in the northern part of the state, where our governor has also said that people are required to wear a mask. But interestingly, in Lincoln City County, they said everyone but people of color is required to wear a mask. And that made national news. People were absolutely outraged because either the masks aren't working or the public health authorities were ready to throw all of the people of color under the bus, right? Because it couldn't be both. If the masks is really going to help keep you safe, how could you possibly say people of color shouldn't wear them? Or maybe the mask isn't really keeping you safe. So what people don't realize is that wearing a mask is not benign. Anyone with breathing problems, anyone with lung compromised lungs is going to potentially have a problem when they're wearing a mask. The other thing is that if you are a trauma survivor, if you've been raped, if you've been suffocated or held down by somebody who was wearing a mask, then you are going to have an anxiety attack and PTSD every time you put a mask on. If you have sensory processing disorder, if you are struggling with autism, if you have hearing loss, if you are deaf, we can't talk to people. But there are things, right, because you can't mm-hmm. see their faces. I actually find it very triggering and terrifying when I see people, especially when they're wearing black masks. And that's, it's very hard if you've survived some kind of trauma to deal with a masked world. But And I have to say, there is a lot of science on both sides. I mean, you can, it was very interesting. I heard a Nobel Prize winner talking about this, and he was actually really, really complimenting Sweden for their public health initiatives. And he was also saying in the same breath that he thought that people should be wearing masks. But what's interesting is I've been interviewing doctors in Sweden, and no one in Sweden has worn a mask. Very few people. It has not been part of their public health. Of course, the doctors in the hospitals have been wearing masks. So, you know, you can really find information on both sides. But one thing we absolutely know is that wearing a mask is not going to save anyone or make you feel good or make you healthy. Of course, if you're sick, Bernadette, you should stay home. I mean, one of the things is that our immune systems ask us to do that. And it's interesting that people are finally paying attention, because how many times have you seen a parent say, oh, my kid had a fever and I gave them a pill and I sent them to school. But the thing is, when you are feeling sick, your body, your immune system asks you to hide. You want to go to bed. You feel lethargic and tired. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah. And it's so important. There are a couple of things I want to touch on. When your body gives you symptoms, I like to encourage people to say, thank you, immune system. I'm tired and I feel like I just want to lay down and I'm really warm. I say, thank you, immune system, because this is the evidence that my immune system is helping me find balance. It's sensing something's here, which is trying to do something, and it's leading me in a certain direction. I don't want to suppress the fever, although I might want to cool myself and become more comfortable with cold cloths, with cold socks on my feet. You know, all of these things have been, these old wisdoms from, you know, our mothers and grandmothers actually have been proven by science how they are helpful. And we know that taking antipyretics increases severity because it's shutting down your immune system's ability to fight, and increases duration and increases likelihood of poor outcomes to infection. So really respecting that your immune system does marvelous things, that immune reaction can get out of control, you know, and so it is important to have the nutrients on board that you need to sustain a healthy immune reaction so it doesn't go out of control. But I want to go back to what you were saying about trauma and anxiety and a whole lot of other reasons why people cannot safely wear a mask for psychological or physical health reasons. And here's my real concern. And I've been reaching out to the community and trying to figure out how are we going to have answers to this. Because even before the statewide requirement, whatever it is, you would be glared at by some people because you're not wearing a mask. You would be challenged upon entry in places. And that is going to become worse. And if you are somebody who experienced trauma, and that's why you can't put on the mask, now every single time you decide to leave home And you've got you. It's like, do I mask and put myself through that emotional trauma and physical danger in order not to be bullied and stared at and harassed because they don't know who I am. They don't know why I'm not wearing it. Or, you know, do I, you know, it's stomach churning. It raises your stress level before you've even left home because you know the world is going to be judging you. And there has been nothing from the governor, the secretary of health, public health department that has said, don't judge others if they're not masked. You don't know why. Nobody's saying be kind.
No, in fact, our public health message is the opposite. Our public health message is don't inadvertently kill someone today as if you know, as if your very presence is going to harm someone. And that goes back to why, you know, a lot of people of color are scared to wear masks for good reason, because when they put masks on, they are seen by racist police officers and other white people as a threat and a terror. So they feel like they are going to be seen as criminalized and even shot at, which is actually true if they're wearing a mask. But if they're not wearing a mask, they're going to be seen as selfish and not thinking of others. And, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous to think that your health is that my that what I do or don't do is the major thing that's going to affect your health. We all have to take responsibility for our own health. And of course, we have to be careful and cautious and community minded. But that has nothing to do with wearing a mask. I mean, we've thrown so many people under the bus with this, Bernadette. We've thrown people with hearing loss. We've thrown people who are deaf.
In this state, they say, you know, if you're deaf, you don't have to wear it. Or if you're communicating with a deaf person, you can remove your mask
People don't know. They just see you walking down the street and they yell at you.
I don't know that you're deaf. Right.
People who are running in without anyone within 35 feet of them get harassed and screamed at for not wearing a mask. I mean, this is very, it goes back to why my mother didn't like humans, because our nature it's very base and it's very disturbing and it's very tribal in a way. Like, let's make us against them and let's try to kill the other. I mean, it's really a disappointing thing.
It really is. And I laugh, and yet it is very serious business to desocialize people, to turn the public health agencies are really using the public against each other to push their agenda and their requirements, which are not scientifically based, at least not on a very broad integrated way. And that leads us to, you know, the fact that they're telling, even though that there are safe and effective treatments, which are not being discussed, even though they're safe and effective preventives, like taking care of yourself and having adequate vitamin D levels and all of that to make sure you are immune resistant. And they're saying, we have to wait for a vaccine. And they're rushing the vaccines through. And some of them are on novel platforms, never even used in humans before. The chief scientists and medical doctors out there are, those who are usually very pro-vaccine, are really voicing a lot of concern for the fact that people are being pushed and made so afraid they might be willing to line up to be test subjects, because that's what they're going to be. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, we've had a population explosion among humans. There are over, 7.8 billion people on the planet. And most of those people have been very recent history. And I think that if people are going to be lining up to get an unsafe and untested vaccine, we're going to see many, many more problems than we've actually seen with COVID-19. What your listeners need to know is that there has never been a safe and effective vaccine against a COVID or a coronavirus. So the idea that we could do one when the average time to develop a safe vaccine is 20 years, the idea that we could do one in 18 months is kind of like chasing a unicorn.
I've heard Del Bigtree. In fact, let's give a shout out to The High Wire with Del Bigtree. You can find him on YouTube and Facebook. He talks about the vaccine unicorn that's being chased. And really, the virus, because it does want to live in harmony with humans, is evolving and changing, and we're learning about it, and it will burn out and not be a dangerous thing before any safe and effective vaccine can ever be brought to market.
Which is a fantastic thing for human health and a terrible thing for big pharma.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but again, the COVID chaos is pointing out a lot of things that need to be changed. And I'm glad we're talking about it. And I'm so glad you're out there with your intelligence and wisdom, your ability to translate science to person. And so check out JenniferMarglis.net, listeners, and look at Your Baby Your Way. It's a great way to be introduced to Jennifer and all that she's about. I really highly recommend it. It's a great read, great gift for your friends. So I'm going to leave listeners now. I'm going to say thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me, Bernadette. Yeah. It's a pleasure to be here.
Very simple message regarding health. Please read deeply, think critically, act accordingly, love yourself, love your neighbors, hug, run, laugh, love, be respectful of others. Everybody, please be kind. Stay well, my friends, and make it a healthy day.
Back to sleep.